cliffcentral.com. The Unview, the thin, the rich, and the fabulous on cliffcentral.com.
And this is The Unview, the thin, the rich, and the fabulous. And it's a Thursday, and it's good to be with you here on cliffcentral.com. My name is Alan Ford, and the summer's in the air. Magic's here. Yeah, it's always good stuff. We've got a lovely packed entertainment show here for you. Paul Slabolepsky and Bobby Heaney are coming into studio. We've also got a band, a top band called Rubber Duck. The Rubber Ducks. Yeah, we'll chat to them. I believe the hits all over the radio. We also were talking to a great restaurant in Cape Town, one of the top restaurants. You know, we always do our restaurant review. We'll chat to Chatty Matty with regard to the magic of the theatre and the entertainment scene. And we're going to talk about what I would imagine to be, for men in South Africa, possibly the biggest event of the year. And it's the GQ Best Dressed Man. And on the line from GQ Magazine, I have Jason Alexander-Besson. He is the fashion editor. And this really is the men's premium event, Jason, is it not?
It is. And it's, you know, it's not only that. It's also the one event of the year where men really show up. And by that, I mean they turn it out with their suits. They come dressed to the nines looking like, you know, gold, basically.
Jason, it is interesting because often if you think about it in South Africa, we've got the Miss South Africa's, we've got the Style Awards in some respect. You've got the other award ceremonies, which is Women's Glamour's Best Dress. But this is the only thing for guys, really, is it not? It really is.
Well, I mean, we have Mr. Universe and things like that, but I don't think people pay much attention to that.
Let's take it seriously, Jason. Let's take it seriously.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is kind of, I think that's also, you know, it's part of the culture of kind of men's wear. We like to do things, you know, we like to do things a bit more discreetly. We like to keep to ourselves. We don't like to kind of flaunt our stuff. And we like to focus our attentions on one single thing. And it happens to be the Best Dressed Men of the Year Awards.
I must tell you, GQ, the style has changed somewhat. I love the fact that you're doing a lot of, should I say, a male Vogue version. And I think it's quite divine, Jason, in terms of the fashion and as a fashion editor. And it's great to see that, you know, we're doing something different with men's fashion. What is the secret and why has it shifted in the direction that you're going?
Well, I think what's kind of happened, which I've seen a lot, is, you know, I think the transition that we're seeing these days is a move from heritage to kind of just embracing what's happening in the here and now. So, you know, when I refer to heritage, I talk about like that very sort of traditional kind of sartorial vision of what a man needs to look like. So that's that very, very kind of structured, suited and booted sort of look, you know, very tailored, very sort of accessorized and all of those things. And I think that the move is kind of slowly away from that because also particularly in terms of South African fashion, you know, it's about, we're at this beautiful point in our lives where we're kind of rediscovering, or actually just, yeah, rediscovering ourselves as South African men and kind of redefining what it means to be a South African man in fashion. So with that, you know, we're kind of embracing new, looser silhouettes. It's more comfortable. It's more natural. It's more organic. There's a lot more personal style rather than kind of like a uniform of style. And I think that, you know, certainly from last year's Best Dressed Awards to this year's fashion showcase, like we're seeing a lot more in the way of prints, a lot more in the way of like really sort of razzle-dazzle fabrics. And, you know, I think it's just a really exciting time to be a man in fashion these days.
Jason, Best Dressed Man, how do you select the winners? Because there are an array of winners, and then, of course, we have the overall winner. How does the process begin?
It's quite a lengthy process, so it kind of almost takes up to 6 months. So what happens is we canvass social media and make, you know, sort of make notes on who's out there, who's talking, who's saying what. You know, we're paying attention to that. We're also paying attention to, you know, personal style. Like, that's obviously a very, very, very important factor in our decision. And I think we're also kind of into consideration they represent. You know, we have had some issues in the past where a Best Dressed Man has kind of, you know, not lived up to his name. I won't mention who those people are, but that's also why, you know, it's not just about the man's clothing. It's about the man inside the clothing. And it's also just taking into account like a track record of what they've contributed to this country and what they stand for as a man. And I think that's also really important going forward because, you know, it's style isn't just a superficial kind of aesthetic value. It's something that you embody from, you know, from the toes all the way up to the crown of your head. You know, it's inside your soul. It's a way of being. So it's important to acknowledge men that are actually going to kind of lead the way and pave the way for other men in this country in terms of how they live their lives and what they represent. Because, you know, we don't only want to be rewarding guys that are stylish and, you know, big talk and no walk, you know. And I think that's also, it puts us in a very responsible kind of position. You know, we can't just be punting, you know, guys that are making noise but aren't
doing
actually sitting
much,
role for youth.
My final question, are you allowed to reveal any of it before next week?
I can tell you that I think this year's selection and this year's winner it's going to make a lot of people happy. And I think it's also something that's been a long time coming.
Okay.
So yeah, I won't give away too much, but
We're going to have the winner on next week. We'll chat to them. But more importantly, it's great to see the work that the GQ team are doing for men's fashion and for men in general. You know, I just think the magazine's doing great. Congratulations. And we look forward to
Thank
being
you
at
so
the
much,
event.
Alan.
It is the
a
men's
labor of love. It's a labor of love. We love doing what we do.
It is the men's event of the year, Jason. And I've got to tell you, it's always fun to go. And I must say, the men are always very hot. You can't lie.
Do you know what you're wearing yet, Alan?
I know exactly what I'm wearing because I don't change much. But I must say, I started to dress up the bow tie, and I'm trying these new pins that you put on with the little flowers and stuff. It's very interesting.
Okay, lapel pins.
Yes, I know. We're learning, Jay. But you got to do it for us, baby.
If you need some, you know, advice or a little consultation,
I shall
phone
you.
My number.
I know your number. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us on, Alan.
Excellent.
I really appreciate it.
Shot. That's Jason Alexander Besson, and he is the fashion editor for GQ magazine. And yes, the best dressed man. We're going to find it out next week, and we'll have them on the show. This is clipcentral.com. So from looking good and feeling fit to eating good and feeling great. I've got to tell you, one of my favorite restaurants in Cape Town is a restaurant called Beluga. And you know, there are lots of them around South Africa, but this is the genuine one, the original. And so what you're listening to here is just talking about Beluga in Cape Town. We've got the owner, Oscar, he should get an Oscar for the brilliance of its food. Thank you for joining us, Oscar, on the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Anna. You know, I don't do these sort of things, but for you, Mr. Ford, I'll do almost anything. So, yeah, you know what that means.
Oscar, I must tell you, you know, you're an institution, but most importantly, what impresses me is that I can come to your venue before 7 o'clock. It's half-price cocktails, half-price sushi, but it's not this lame, horrible sushi. It's the proper McCoy stuff. And all in all, your service, the ambiance, it's got to be one of the best restaurants in Central Cape Town.
I know. We're far from the best ever. Yeah, I know. It's all about the love and what we put in there. We love what I do, and I love Cape Town. So that's really, you know, love to people. And I actually, you know, we love everyone. I think that kind of filters through at some point. It's all about the love and, you know, the food that just comes with it, I think.
Oscar, tell us a bit about your summer menu and what people can expect from Beluga 2016.
You know, it's 2016. 2016 is going to come, but soon. We do molecular gastronomy. We've been working on things for so long. It's just finally.
What is that, by the way? What is molecular gastronomy?
You obviously know Heston Blumenthal and how they cook with all this little funny stuff. We did kits a while ago. We created like ways of cooking with it, and we just never pushed the idea. But we know all the science behind food, so it's just figuring it out how to get it properly to our guests, and that we're working on at the moment. So yeah, it's like a Beluga's new logo is handcrafted, and it's our fifth version. So we keep on saying every version we do, every reinvention just gets on better.
What would you, for people that have never been to Beluga in Cape Town, what for you are the number one meals? What should people be eating on your menu?
Oh my God, Alan.
Sushi's number one. Yeah, it's...
Seafood, okay. Sushi's only like a bit of ourselves. We only do 18 million pieces a year.
18 million pieces of sushi?
Yeah, that's all we do. We kind of push it a little bit more. The quality, you know, there's only so many salmons in the sea. So, and the rand dollar is messing us a bit. And then food, we do a duck now, you won't believe, it's a fresh duck. It gets to a certain weight, and we only use young, fresh ducks because they're better. obviously I'm moving up in age, but I know that I had a little bit of fat in my body when I was younger. And the ribs, slow braised, 12 hours deboned. We use sous-vide cooking. So yeah, I've got everything. I don't think there's anything bad on the menu.
So once, so your store in Cape Town, 18 million pieces of sushi a year.
18 million pieces, yes.
Okay. And you know, Oscar, it is a big pull-in factor that people can go at 5 o'clock, have half-price cocktails, have half-price sushi. And
Sunday the whole day, Alan, the whole day on Sunday. Can you believe it?
Yeah,
and
I think
we've
it's
done great. This now for 10 years, and we're going to do it for the next 10. And it's not easy, but we're managing to keep it there, and the quality we are pushing to get better every single day.
Well, I've got to tell you something. I've selected you as my restaurant of the month. I think it's excellent.
Come on, Mr. Ford. You've been there so many times.
Okay, you restaurant of the year. But I mean,
come on. You used to eat the sushi salad there. You know that tuna salad used to blow you sideways.
Okay, the restaurant of a lifetime.
There you go. We're more than just a restaurant of a lifetime. We are just a restaurant, and all we do is make food, and that's the basic it. But no, we're there. We're never going to be in the top 60 anywhere in the world. But yeah, we are. We are. So yeah.
But again, I find it's value for money. The quality is not as top class, first class.
We try, Alan. You know, we try and keep the prices. It's just why, you know, we work very hard. We don't make excessive amounts of money, but it's never been about the money. It's about making people happy. So.
And I know that's always been your philosophy. Oscar, Beluga is open 7 days a week. I know the only day you don't open is, I think, Christmas Day.
No, Alan, we use Christmas Day. We work very hard to make everybody happy, and I'll be there Christmas and New Year's to make sure for special occasions. But I mean, every day I try and work as much, even though, again, I've got beautiful partners and awesome staff, and we really try and get everything better. So, yeah.
It's Beluga. It's the best. And, of course, it's in Greenpoint. Don't miss it. It's great.
No, you can't miss it. So what else would you like to know about Mr. Ford?
I just think you're fabulous. I want to still do a big eat out there with you. We'll do that at a later stage. Do some fun.
Just remember, I like blondes, but I think I found a perfect one. So no more little blondes for Oscar. I think we had a campaign plan for Oscar needs a wife or something like that. But a bruise came here for only, so we got that waxed.
It's excellent speaking to you, Oscar. And of course, Beluga in Cape Town is the place to be. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Adam. I appreciate it.
And that is a great, great restaurant, really. Sure, not to be missed. And please don't compare them to the other ones around the country, but this is the one. This is the original. Beluga in Cape Town. So here on The Unview, every single week, we discuss, of course, the magic of the entertainment world, the magic of theatre. And I must tell you, I think this is the only spot that really accredits theatre to the extent that we do. And I love doing it because I think that theatre can never be a lost art in the society. We can never have it. And my special guest coming up in a moment is Paul Slab and Bobby Heaney. We'll chat to them in a moment. We've also got a band coming in later called Rubber Duck. I thought rubber ducks were on the sea. That's just me. But hey, you never know what ends up happening. But on the line, we've got our regular theatre contributor, Mr. Entertainment himself, Chatty Maddie Matthew Coonan. Welcome to the show, boy.
Ellie, it's so different being on this side of the studio today.
I know. And it's weird not having you here with me. It's kind of strange. But
the other day,
a couple of weeks ago, I was in Cape Town and we had to do this. So I know
of course.
How did the Red Week go? How did it all go?
Fest was a feast. It was an absolutely awesome affair. Proof of concept is there. It is something that's going to be a regular on our entertainment calendar. And I think, you know, just the brave Red Hill for putting themselves out there and kind of creating a new platform for our artists to celebrate and perform their work. I think it's awesome, awesome, awesome.
What's happening in theatre? What's happening in the theatre this week, my boy?
Well, Ellie, we came down with the most awesome opening evening of Annie. I mean, it is the best musical for families this coming season. And we had the privilege of being there, you know, on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that was absolutely fantastic and magic. And hats off to the team and the producers for putting on big, kind of, I call them McDonald's musicals because they're the same wherever you go. But except this one has our own talents, you know.
There are the McDonald's musicals, but you know what? You know that when you go to McDonald's, wherever you are in the world, you're getting a sure thing. Okay, but I mean,
exactly.
But I personally think it's McDonald's not first class. This is first class.
No, it totally is. And you know what? I think with our South African cast, we've got a hunger with our actors. You know, we don't have the regular West End gigs over here. So our actors, I think, are working that little bit harder to sustain themselves. And I don't know, it comes across in the excitement and the, I don't know, the professionalism of the cast. They're constantly on it. So I'm really chuffed about that piece, and I really wish them well in their venture, you know.
Matthew, what else is happening?
You know what, there's the fantastic stuff happening at the Market Theatre. There's a piece that opened this last week, Friday, called The Cenotaph. Fantastic piece. It's a wonderful straight drama, as always. Matthew Rudnick at Daphne was huge to come back at the program. We love Matthew. Great, great actor. And I'm just trying to think. Oh, of course, Dorp. You know, I haven't seen it yet, but it's opened. I'll see it shortly. Dorp is showing at Peter Tureen's Theatre. And it's one, you know, another Afrikaans piece. And you just see these Afrikaans pieces kind of taking residence in Peter Tureen's little studio theatre upstairs. And it's the team that brought you Altaken May Druma and what Sandra Prinsloo's piece, the name escapes me all of a sudden, Oscar and Pink Bunny. So fantastic team. Sylvain Strike directed that. So a meticulous director, really, really exceptional. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And last but not least, a piece that is making a comeback. I saw it at the Market Theatre earlier this year. Directed by Bobby Heaney, it's got Paul Slab in it, Charmaine Weir-Smith, and I think it's Renata Stuermann. Suddenly the Storm. Really, really exciting piece. It's good to see Paul Slab back on stage. Paul Slab being Paul Slab, such a generous and giving actor. And what really was amazing about this piece, and I hope that they recreate the same sense again, is the environment, the set, is the most exceptionally, exceptionally detailed set that I've come across straight drama on stage in a long time. In fact, built by the guys that bought you Sweeney Todd and Little Shop, so the guys from Durban, I think it's Greg King. And I think, once again, what's interesting here is we've got Bobby Heaney, who is a television and film director.
Producer and director.
Yeah, so, and I think what he brings to this piece is that meticulous detail, which is often overlooked in theatre. Because it's kind of broader strokes in terms of sets and stuff. And here we've got a piece which is just so detailed and crafted. And that is coming up. That's going to be opening at Daphne Theatre on the Square, but also in General Theatre on the Square a little later, I think this month. And I believe we're going to be speaking to Paul himself.
The Orange Studio, Bobby? I've got to tell you that we've got both of them in studio right now. But Matt, I've got to tell you, I'm missing you dearly. I can't wait to have you back with me next week. Next week, we're together.
We'll see you next week, Al. Have a great time.
Lots of fun happening next week. We've got Mafikizolo coming into studio. We've got some really great names. And that's Chatty Matty, Matty Kunanen, our theatre. I call him a thespian, but he's not a lesbian, but we'll go with it for now. And in studio, I have got, I would say, one of the top directors.
Oh, thank you.
One of the top producers.
Well, listen, I want Matthew's number. Gee, I want him as my full-time publicist, please.
Okay. I shall send it. And then, of course, we have actor extraordinaire, Paul Slab. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here. Yeah.
Paul Slab-Olepsky. Now, I mean, my goodness. I mean, of course, we know you for years in this business, but isn't it magical to be back on the stage, to be doing such an interesting piece?
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely out of this world. I mean, to be working with Bobby and a cast like I've got, Charmaine and Renata, they are just completely stunning. And it's an incredible journey that is still ongoing. This is returning by public demand, so we're very excited about the second run now.
It is a second run, and it's based on a girl born in 1976.
Yes, that's right.
Tell me the story. Where does it begin?
Well, look, we can't tell you that, you know, this is the whole thing about this play. And, you know, having to tell people that, you know, you want to know the story, you have to see the play, because there's so many twists and turns. And there's there's something at the end of the play that can never be spoken about. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have to see it. But a fascinating thing for me, I mean, I did write it to commemorate the 76 riots. And it's interesting, it's history kind of in a funny way repeating itself at the moment. But I met
it is funny, is it not?
You know, and then crazy. I always seem to write, well, not always, but I've written some plays that the timing is absolutely perfect. And education, youth, youngsters, it's all happening right now, and we're doing this suddenly, the storm. But I had a woman just a couple of days ago in Rosebank who'd seen the play, and she said to me, that this, she said, I've got to tell you, I saw the play, I was very excited about it. It's the most heart-wrenching love story since Romeo and Juliet. Mm. I mean, that so it's a love story, you see, as well as something else.
I think it's a thriller.
It's
a thriller, it's a love story, it's unbelievably funny, and you're not going to get better performances on the South African stage than the three actors on the show.
Well, it starts in the Far East Rand.
Yeah, well, that's right.
That's where it's set.
Yeah, the whole, look, I mean, what
audience? Hold on, we got to start it somewhere.
Okay, it's the Far East Rand. And it's, you know, it's interesting for people out there who, I mean, I saw a docu a couple of weeks ago, The Radio Rats, and they talk about growing up in Springs and everything.
Mm.
And in the movie there, you see there's a place called, I think it's a Far East Rand dry cleaners.
Yeah.
Now, the play is set in the Far East Rand gate and fence works. It's a metal steel worker. I weld on stage, I angle grind.
Because you're a former cop.
Well, yes.
You're an ex-cop.
He's a former ex-cop, yeah.
That's married to a younger wife.
To a younger wife.
To a little puppy.
Yeah, puppy, okay. That's right. And this a black woman arrives who's exactly 40 years old. She was born on the 16th of June, 1976. Mm-hmm. And she comes with a whole bunch of questions. And that, when Bobby says it's a thriller, that's exactly what it is. You think, what the hell is this woman looking for?
Mm.
Why is this guy involved? And his young wife knows nothing about what's going on, you know. So that's basically how it starts.
Mm.
Yeah, and
a roller coaster ride. It starts to reveal itself
from beginning to end. And you know, the audience come and sit in this auditorium, and they see a set straight out of Broadway. I mean,
Greg King.
Greg King.
Yes.
Matthew mentioned it just now. His set is absolutely.
Greg works with Stephen Stead. Yes,
that's right.
That's
and they've got beautiful, absolutely. Yeah. And they're craftsmen.
And they set the reality of the thing. It's a very, very real play.
Mm.
When you sit in that auditorium, you look at that and you think, but that's a real place we're in, you know. And then you get these real performances and this unraveling of the marriage between Dwayne, played by Paul, and Chanel. Because her mother was?
Mm-hmm. Her mother was Charlene, and her Omar was Renal. So they put the two names together
yes.
to become Chanel.
I must just say, I've been doing a lot of Afrikaans television. It is a very Afrikaans colored thing to take two names and mix them
together. There's a whole story about how that happens in the play. I love it.
And then, of course, this whirlwind happens. She is the storm.
Yeah, literally. Well, as Bobby was created,
I know we can't go into too much detail.
Yeah, Bobby's created the storm on stage where it has, you know, the play. She enters, and a whole lot of stuff goes on. But when the play starts really getting into the nitty gritty of things, a Heifeld storm arrives,
and that
is the backdrop to the drama that's going on. And it's one of the...
So the storm is not only literal, and I mean it's an incredible thunderstorm that happens on stage, but obviously the storm of Dwayne's life as this woman comes in and all hell breaks loose.
I can just imagine.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine that Dwayne was involved as an ex-cop in that period.
Yeah.
I can just imagine. I would imagine.
1976.
One could.
He was 22 years old.
I can just see it.
Rumbling into Soweto in the belly of a hippo.
I think a lot of this work does create some reconciliation.
Absolutely.
I haven't seen it,
yeah,
but I can just see where potentially it could hold a lot of space.
You know, Paul mentioned just now, heart-wrenching. I think it's incredibly moving, the ending of the play, without giving too much away. You go through this roller coaster ride, as you say, and these three people's lives just explode. But there is certainly a very moving ending, which I think gives a lot of hope to this country.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I could write a play, right, especially right now, that doesn't deal with the coming together. Because we deal with racism, sexism, a lot of stuff in the play, all those isms. But, you know, in the end of it all, after this huge storm that just tears everyone to pieces, there's this great coming together. The audience response up to now, that's why we're bringing it back, has been just phenomenal. Standing ovations, packed houses.
85% houses.
Yeah,
the last
and we want to continue that now, but just let people know that it's on, you know.
I find it quite incredible because I'm sitting with two exceptional people. But I do want to say the following, is that all three of us Right. Started in the radio background.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yes. Sports commentator.
That's right. Yes. Okay. I was
back in the day.
Public address at the Wanderers and early morning on 7:02 with John Burks and
the eye in the sky. Well, you and I doing the eye in the sky. Bobby Heaney.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Chubby Ford is sitting. I said,
Chubby Ford. You know? Do you know how many years ago you're talking now? Paul and I first play that of Paul's that I directed was Saturday Night at the Palace. That's 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And here
look,
we are again.
I was the player at the Roadhouse.
Because there's not much radio happening, but there's incredible theatre work happening with you.
Yeah.
And film, by the way.
Yeah, obviously, movies as well.
Forever. And Bobby, you behind the scenes. You're now like the eye in the sky filming everything. You're big brother. Yeah. And what an interesting world to be in.
Yeah.
You know, South Africa. Alan, you said something just now, and I just want to pay you a compliment. Theatre is the mother of the arts, and yet it is the Cinderella of the arts as well. It's really hard to get people excited enough to get out of their couches on an evening and go and sit for 2 hours in a live theatre. And for me, the fact that you're punting theatre in this day and age, we can't thank you enough, because it's when people get into the theatre and they go, why didn't we do this before? Mm. And the fact that you get them in there means a lot to us. Thank you.
I thank you for that. But I do think it is such an art, and I think it's the most difficult.
Yeah.
And Bobby, being being in television, you and I know we can cut.
Yes.
We can cut
exactly.
And the Three Talk and the Lean Days, obviously we couldn't cut those, but you contrive a lot of stuff. But theatre. Minute you're on, you're alive. It's a fix.
And it is a fix. And you get that, you know, connection with the audience. You know, you think suddenly the storm comes on stage and you have people sitting there waiting to climb on this train with you, this runaway train, and then walk out like flying, you know, and that's how it's been every night for us, this show.
Well, we can't wait to see it, but I'm not leaving you just at that. I want to know what other work you've been doing of late. Of course, Paul, we look back at your life in film and in theatre, and I had the pleasure of doing a Sunday show on 7:02 where we got to spend one-on-one time with people, and I should make them bring the music in. And I had Bill Flynn.
Oh, yes.
Who was your great friend. I mean, he left us far too soon. But I remember him, because at that time, going back 14, maybe 15 years ago, he was saying, this is my bestie. This is my man. It's like Paul and Bill.
Absolutely.
It's like a Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you look back on those years, what are some of your greatest moments of your career?
There are too many to mention, you know. I mean, I suppose the greatest time was traveling with Saturday Night at the Palace, you know, going all around the UK and going to Sweden and stuff like that. You know, those were great.
Playing the old Vic in London.
I played the old Vic. You know, not many people who can say they played probably the most famous theatre in the world, two South Africans hoing on the stage. But I mean those are really great days. I mean, I've got tons of stories of stuff we did, and I miss him. It's huge, but the fact that you can go on doing theatre and still creating stories, and I kind of, in a funny way, he's always around now. I get the feeling that when I'm doing a show, often before I go on stage, even for suddenly the storm, I'll be look up and say, "Okay, I'm going to hoy now into the storm." And it's a funny way Bill is there.
Isn't
he?
Yeah. And Bob, when you look back in terms of the magic that you've worked with these guys together, with Paul, with 34 years of magic and of hard work. This is not easy stuff. Eh?
No way.
This is not for sissies.
No, but I've also got to say, Paul's given me an extraordinary gift in my life in that I've now directed 12, 13 of his original plays, which means you bring them to life. And that's an enormous responsibility when you put on a play for the first time. You've got to make sure, like with Suddenly the Storm, that it's a great success and that it'll live for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Because when you bring it to life, you have no idea whether it's really going to work or not. And with this one, I think Paul has written his best play by some margin.
Paul, I'm gonna say, of course we're gonna see this, and it's gonna be magical. But Saturday Night at the Palace needs a comeback. Bobby, it needs a bit of a comeback.
You know, in a funny way.
I mean, you're talking about soccer boots.
Yes,
you better
get to the
comeback.
There are echoes of Palace like in this one. It's like almost like it's a full circle.
Yeah.
I started with the Palace. Palace was the big explosion, and And I said to Bobby, I'm going to give you a play that is as powerful as Saturday Night at the Palace, mm-hmm. in different ways. Okay, it's not two guys on a motorbike and stuff, which is you know, bringing a motorbike on stage. I think when I said to Bobby the first time, "Hey, Bobby, we're going to bring a bike on stage," and he sort of went white. But and then we had that Honda on the Old Vic stage in London, and these poor Brits, they'd never seen anything like it in their lives before.
You know, yeah.
And of course, the famous "Yes, like."
Yes, like.
Yes, yeah, like. Yes, like.
Yeah. Check a moon.
Yeah. Bobby, you were saying?
Yeah, we did do Palace again at the Baxter Theatre down in Cape Town a few years ago. But in a kind of way, this one has taken Palace quite a lot further, hey, Paul?
Yes, yeah.
In terms of the incredible deep emotions that these people feel. Mm. Saturday Night at the Palace was raw out there. It was an anti-apartheid play that dealt with the awful things that were happening at that time. This one is dealing with South Africa today. Reverting back to stuff that happened in 1976, sure. But for me, it's much more complex, it's much more emotional, and it's much more, if I may say, mature, and could only have been written by somebody who is now...
Who has matured. Sorry. I mean, now you have matured.
But listen, he still comes on swinging a baseball bat with blood on the bat. I mean, it's a wild. No. I mean, the entrance, you've never seen an entrance to Johnny Clegg's, what's the number? But he comes on.
What is it, waving. MP or something?
Yeah, no. It's not, what's the number? I can't remember. But he comes on, he's just been going out. He's a collector as well. Mm. Like, he was a cop years ago. He's an iron and steel worker now, but he collects debts. He collects debts. And you know me. Sure. Jimmy Abbott and all those Oaks.
Yeah, of course.
When the Oaks don't pay, boy.
I'm from Lebanese descent. Well, yeah. We get it.
So there's that in the play. You know, when the guys see this Oak coming onto the baseball bat full of blood, they think, what the hell is this? But, you know, it moves into different areas and that. So it's like, and as Bobby says, I've taken, like, there are powerful, gritty elements that, like, were in Palace, but I've taken it way beyond that in this play. Yeah.
Which is great. Which we want to see. You want to see... progression in one's own personal work and in where someone was 40 years ago, even as a director and a producer. Yep. It's great to see what you've done in 10 years and then 10 years from there. And that's the best way to kind of be in some respects.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you on a bet now. If you're not utterly, utterly blown away by this play when you see it, I will take you and a couple of your mates for dinner. But if you are blown away,
I love Bobby.
And if you are blown away,
I'm taking you for dinner.
Oh, that's where I'm sneaking her.
Okay, I will be. Firstly, I'm a huge Bobby Heaney fan,
thank you,
and a huge Paul fan. So I will be blown away, and I cannot wait to see it. So let's just get down to the nitty gritty. What are the dates, and how long does it run for?
Well, you know, there's something we should say straight away, Alan. We're creating a bit of history here, in that this is the first time that a Market Theatre play is going to be presented at Daphne's Theatre on the Square.
Yeah, Nelson Mandela Square, yeah.
Yeah, and it's only being done because we need to continue the play while it's still hot. Mm. It was produced for the first time in June this year. To coincide with June the 16th, which is an important day. And the fact that it's now... at the Theatre on the Square, we think we're going to be getting to another bunch of people who wouldn't necessarily go to the Market.
I made a statement. I went with Matthew Coonan to a play at the Market Theatre recently, Zaek Simdao, directed by John Carney.
Yes.
And that Market Theatre on a Tuesday night was buzzing, booming.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was packed and the bars were full and the theatre was full. And then... a couple of nights later, I went off to Theatre on the Square and was hugely disappointed in my thought pattern, because I thought, is Explorer and Netflix really that good that you're sitting at home and you're not... And they happen to have magical stuff on at the time. Because Daphne doesn't touch things that are not...
Yeah.
That firstly don't fill up the theatre and don't make it work. But I do think people need to get back into it.
Yeah,
because and I think the young... Johannesburg, Joburg, Bramfontein culture is getting it, and of course we're seeing that, but we need to get people from the outer areas into the theatre, because it's still such a wonderful thing to do, and it's not heavily expensive.
Yeah.
It's not costing you. But exactly. We have this idea in our head. The minute we go off to the UK, the first thing we're going to do is go and buy tickets for Annie.
And this is it.
And, we spend $100 on it.
Yeah, please. £100, £200.
Easy.
I mean, it's crazy. And you know, here, as we've said, you know, you're getting, with our play, with Suddenly the Storm, you're getting a Broadway production for 0.0001% of what you pay on Broadway. And it's as good as what you see on Broadway.
And what are tickets at the moment?
$150.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, can I just tell you, it's a great theatre. The bar is great.
Yeah, great bar. And you're right on the square.
You're on the square. Yeah. It's easy. And the nicest thing is it's an intimate space.
Yeah.
And I can imagine what you could... I can't wait to see what you can do on that stage because...
Yeah, no, you won't believe... Look, you know, it's interesting that we've had to make a couple of plans to get our big stage set from the market onto the stage, but we're getting it on there. I was there last night at the theatre. I thought, geez, the audience are going to be blown away when they see this. We're going to get it onto that stage you know, with a couple of compromise, not too much, like the roof, we have to take the roof away, but otherwise it's as you would have seen it at the market, you know, so it's great. And we start on the 26th of October, which is it's 2 weeks tonight. Yeah. 2 weeks tonight's the opening, and we play for 4 weeks, and audiences need to book early, because last time, I mean, we were turning hundreds of people away in the last week at the market. We don't want to have that kind of situation.
Please, let's book. Let's give the date. It's the 26th till the end of November.
To the 19th of November. So it's 4 weeks. 4 weeks. We play 8:15 every single night. On Saturdays, we do a 5:30 as well for people who want to have an earlier evening. But it's 8:15 every night, except Mondays and Sundays. But every other night. And people need to, I think it's Ticket Pro, you get tickets, or you can phone to the theatre.
Just phone deaf.
Phone
deaf, give me a ticket. I'll pay for the ticket, obviously, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And it will be, it does appeal to people from
all ages,
14, 15 onwards.
Again, when I read the reviews, it is, as you said, a thriller.
Yeah.
But there is an element of dark comedy.
Now people laugh and they cry. People sob in this play, but they also laugh out of their seats, you know, which is a great thing for us, you know.
Well, we look forward to it. I can't wait to be there. I can't wait to have you guys back in studio. We'll do some more magical things. Bobby, what are you doing? What's on TV? What can we watch, Bob?
Now, you know, at the moment, I'm taking a real backseat in that I'm running the Mnet Magic in Motion Academy.
Okay.
So I've got 20 interns that I am teaching the business of television and film. And it is so exciting to be working with these youngsters.
We've got to do some stuff.
Yes, please.
Because we've got to get them on some of my productions and get them out there.
Yes, please.
Because I do a lot of stuff for CakeNet, which is lovely for a person that really understands Afrikaans perfectly, but poor at speaking it. But I mean, I love what Mnet's doing.
I've come off a film set right now. We make 4 films during the course of the year for Mzansi Magic. And right now we're shooting the second film, 6 days to shoot a movie. It's a real test because my interns do absolutely everything from the conception to the writing to the pre-production to all of the production work, post-production. They do it all themselves under my mentorship.
And that's Bobby Heaney. And of course, we're going to watch for that Mnet Magic. Bless Paul, what do we have after this?
This, I'm telling you, Suddenly the Storm is for the next, as Bobby says. We're going to London, we're going to New York, we're going to Australia, we're going all over the place.
The boys are back.
The boys are back. Now, this is really hitting the road.
With Bill Flynn watching us from heaven. Watching. We love it. Yeah.
I think he's somewhere in the back there as he's pushing us along as we're going.
You know how it goes. Come on, they don't really go anywhere.
No.
Love you guys and cannot wait to see it. Do not miss Suddenly the Storm. Happening at Daphne's Place 26.
Theatre on the Square.
Until mid-November. And of course, get in there and get there fast. Buy those tickets, $150. Come on.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
This is CliffCentral.com. My name is Alan Ford. And of course, the magic continues.
The Unview. The Thin, the Rich, and the Fabulous on CliffCentral.com.
So it's the magic of the Unview every single Thursday, the thin, the rich, and the fabulous. And we still can't work it out who's the thin, who's the rich, who's the fabulous. Well, I definitely am fabulous. This is the magic of radio, and it's good to be here on cliffcentral.com. Jam Josie joins us next week, and it's going to be one of the best festivals. I love a festival, number one, where it's not too crowded, where I can eat and drink a lot of stuff. That's just me. It costs you $100 to get in, and it's at Monte Cassino. You don't have to go to like Rocking the Daisies or some weird outside place. You know, boys, this is what happens. But one of the bands performing is a band called Rubber Duck. This is their new single. This is their new baby stuff happening here. Now, this is rocking. So is it folk, is it pop, is it swing? I think it's just good music, baby. That's what it's about. At Jam Josie, and I'm so happy they've joined me in studio here on The Unview. It's Rubber Duck. Boys, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
What's happening?
That is your new single. It's called We Were There.
Are we there yet? Yes. Sorry. Are we there?
Oh, upside down. Sorry. Trying to remember it. But this is, it's rocking on radios at the moment.
Yeah. We've been very fortunate. It's getting quite a lot of airplay and we're very, very excited. It's our first single off our debut album. I mean, we've been around for 2 years and finally we've got something to release and this is it.
I know that you're friends here at Cliff Central. We love you, peeps.
Yeah, we've been here quite a few times.
You must come back and back.
Listen,
we're having a Christmas festival.
Oh, yeah?
We've got to get you guys to do some stuff with us. We're going to have everyone rocking on stage doing Christmas carols for charity.
Oh, nice. That sounds fun.
I'm including you, peeps. Just so you know, the Leb just says this. We don't ask.
One Leb to the other Leb.
You know how it goes, Sheldon Sham. Very simple. Like your mother says, are you hungry? No, just eat it anyway. Finish. Deal with it. So, boys, the Jam Josie, we're going to chat about that in a moment. How did this all happen? Tell us about Rubber Duck. How did you guys come together?
Yeah, Rubber Ducks, we've been together for about 2.5 years now. To cut the long story short, I met Sheldon playing in a corporate band. I was singing, he was playing sax, and then our guitarist. We just had a lot of projects before that we were working on, and then we put this thing together and we released a song and it seemed to work. And then we found Emil on Facebook, you know, like social media these days, and
it was Facebook.
Great. Yeah.
Saw
this guy like with a big beard and he was holding the guitar in a way that you know this guy can play. We're like, yeah, we saw his like technique from a photo and we're like, yeah, let's audition this guy. Yeah. And the other guys were a bit like, at first, like, yeah, man, but you must give him a shot and, like, just check it out. You know, don't like, you can't go on a photo.
We're missing one band member, Brendan Campbell. What does Brendan do?
He plays guitar and the kick drum.
And the kick drum, okay.
Yeah.
So Rubber Duck is just, describe your sound. People should be listening to you guys.
So our sound, if you took Mumford & Sons and...
Mango Groove.
Oh, really?
That was the one. And they had a baby.
Like a love child.
It would be Rubber Duck.
I've got Claire Johnson on the show next week.
Oh, awesome.
And, you know, Mango Groove's coming out with a new album.
Yeah.
And Mfike Zola's on it, a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is I'm going to play this clip. I'm going to make her listen to your music and I'm going to get you on the line.
Do that.
Basically, you are the love child of Claire Johnson
and Mango Groove.
Yeah. Exactly. Guys, I think the best thing is that through the internet and through the magic of I think these, no disrespect to Gareth and he's my mate, and these idols and these type of competitions, there are a lot of people that still that need to come through. That are the original magic that doesn't have to stand on a stage in a reality competition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% for that. And again, no disrespect to Gareth, I mean, and all them.
Don't worry about it.
I entered Idols twice, actually, beforehand. I didn't even get to the round to see the judges.
And look who's,
which is like,
look who's got the album, baby. Yeah, look who's got the album.
Yeah, which is like to actually see the judges. I think, I don't think you need... you know, like a competition to get to where you want to be these days. And I think also in South Africa especially, people, you're taken more seriously if you don't do it that way. You're taken more seriously if you put in all the hard work.
It's strange, eh?
Yeah, it's very, very, very strange. But it worked. Like for us, we've like, you know, I think if I had maybe done well in Idols and put a band together, for instance, I don't think we might have had the success we're having right now.
Well, you know, I think if you've got the talent, you'll succeed. That's, yeah. I think, that's the truth, but it's really hard. And every shoulda, woulda, coulda, singing on it—it's not gonna really make it.
Yeah.
Your career, what can we expect from you guys? Are you doing a tour? What can we find?
We're touring in December. It's actually our very, very first album tour.
Tell us what is happening.
We are so excited. We're playing New Year's. Firstly, let's start the New Year's show. We're doing that at Billy's Beach in Canton-on-Sea.
Yeah.
We're really excited. The day before that, we will be in Cape in St. Francis Bay at Billy Beach. That side, we're starting off the tour in George. We'll be making our way up through Knysna, through Platt, up through J-Bay, through PE, Kenton, and we're just going to have a great time. It's mainly Eastern Cape and Western Cape we're doing.
And you know, they said the chicks love the bands. They do. They do. And you got a Leb in it. You know, it's going to be very cool.
And especially Leb plays the saxophone.
Yes, my goodness. Tell us about you. Where did you come from with the sax? My lord.
Okay, well, I've been playing sax since a very young age. I started when I was 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 22 now, so it's been about 12 years of just playing and practicing, and you know,
that was great math, the show.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Well, on the money.
He plays the sex. Oh, he plays the. You're the singer. Shut up. Go on.
Singer's always got something to say.
Yeah. Nick Jordan, hush, boy, hush. Go on.
Anyway, also, I mean, I played in a few different bands, and then landed up playing for the corporate band that Nick mentioned earlier. And then ever since then, it's just been rubber duck all the way.
Which I think is great. Guys, I look forward to being a part of the DUC.
Yeah.
Where did the name come from? I love asking this question.
It was funny. Like, Brendan and I, before rubber duck, we were going to be DJs. And when I say we were going to be DJs, because
DJs, that type of thing.
Okay. And when I say we were going to be DJs, it's because we were attempting to maybe be DJs, because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. So we were going to wear duck suits, literally wear duck suits, and drop the song and drop our first single and actually, like, you know, flap our wings more of like more the show. And yeah, so that was going to be called Rubber Duck. And then when we needed a name for the band, that was the first thing that came to our mind. And we were like, okay, this is pretty cool. Yeah, it's called Rubber Duck.
Jam Josie, guys. We're going to see you there next week. Eh?
That's,
it's going to be rocking and rolling. Of course, I love it that people can go to Monty, drink, eat, craft stuff,
Into
the craft bars, and it's 100 rand to get in. Which night are you performing?
We there on the Sunday afternoon. I think it's a really cool concept. I mean, like,
I love it.
Yeah, the people getting behind it. I mean, I know it's Sony ATV. They are publishers. There's a lot of the Sony ATV artists, and they're all local artists who are great artists. I mean, you know, to be signed to Sony ATV, you kind of got to have, you know, be decent. So, I mean, the people can expect quite a really, really great show all around. Also, Marshall Music are getting involved, which is very cool. They're supplying a lot of the backline and the sound, and
I think we're in for a good time at 100 bucks. Think it's. I know they're praying for 7,500, but I mean, let's rock and roll. Joe Berg, you know what? You people say things are boring because half the time I live in Cape Town. Get your asses up, go to the theatre, go to concerts, go have some fun, go eat some good food, and you know what? Get with the program, man. Off that bloody bum on the seat watching TV. Yeah. For goodness sakes.
And it's quite sad. Festivals lately have taken quite a knock. It's not doing well,
but
man.
But you can't charge 800, 900
exactly.
Rand. You can't, guys. It's hard.
Yeah. And that's what's so special now about this one is that you get access to over 20 artists
and
it's for like
bucks.
$100.
It's kind of crazy.
I mean, you got to get in there while it's hot. You know, just do it. Get it. It's going to be fun.
You guys are my new little favorites. I can't wait to learn more about you.
Thank you.
We'll be following you and you'll expect you more on the show. Is that a deal?
100%. Awesome, man.
The Rubber Ducks, thank you for joining me in studio. This has been a great show here on The Unview, The Thin, The Rich, and The Fabulous. Paul Slab and Bobby Heaney, The Rubber Ducks, have been on. Oscar discussing the food from Beluga. Chatty Maddie. We also had GQ's Best Dressed Man. It's been a packed show. Next week, my figure Zola and many, many more here on the one and only CliffCentral.com. It's been good. CliffCentral.com.